Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Optical Consultant Call with Andrew Schmidt. During the presentation, all participants will be in listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. And now it's my pleasure to turn the conference over to Troy Jensen, Senior Research Analyst at Piper Jaffray. Please go ahead.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for dialing in. And thank you, Andrew, for taking the time to do this call with us.
Sure thing.
Yep. Hey, so for those dialing in, we will try to open it up for Q&A probably midway and towards the end of the call. But also, I know a lot of you guys just like to email me, and I can ask the questions, so whatever you prefer. Andrew, just wanted to kind of kick off first, specifically on China. If you go back about a month ago, you were kind enough to forward me your report on the new five-year plan from China. I feel like I've asked every executive that's reported this quarter. All of them claim that it won't really impact them, right? But to me, the intentions of what China's talking about seem like this could be a big headwind for the suppliers. So could you just kind of touch on your thoughts on the five-year plan and what China's trying to do?
Yeah, so I assume most of the folks on the call are familiar with what happened, so I won't go into detail on the plan other than it was a government agency issued a long document that identified areas of technical and commercial weakness within China, specifically surrounding, optics. And they talked about things like LCD displays and some other things like optical fiber, the business that Corning might be in. And, despite the fact that something like LCD displays is a huge business when compared with optical components, the majority of the document and all the detail was really focused specifically on optical components as an area that needs much greater focus and, improvement within the country in order to be strong. I think the specific words were along the lines of, you cannot build a foundation. You cannot build a house on a foundation that is not yours. And so they identified essentially every single optical component that you would need in the supply chain to make these systems. That included telecom components, datacom components. They specifically mentioned DSPs. They specifically mentioned PAM4 chips. So everything. I think part of the issue where it's causing some doubt on the part of the component companies is when you see something like this, it does seem totally unrealistic that they're going to actually come in and just do everything. And the reality is probably closer to there's going to be some areas where they're successful and there's going to be some areas that they're not. And all of this is going to take some time. So in the near term, there's really not any commercial impact. But in the long term, at least in my mind, a very high degree of uncertainty of what's going to happen, because this is the same game plan that they ran when they got into the optical equipment business and the telecom equipment business 20 years ago. I mean, I recall going over to visit Huawei and ZTE in 1999, and you'd go visit buildings that looked like, I'm not exaggerating, like they belonged in Beirut after the war. And they've completely transformed that business, as everyone knows. So I'm approaching this with a very high degree of concern, because I've seen them do this in other businesses, and there's no technical reason why they can't accomplish the same thing in the components business.
So it seems like a lot of the pushback I've been getting is that we hear that China's always trying to in-house, right, a lot of their production. This is just kind of the same game plan, but you're pretty adamant that this is like a changed, this is an acceleration on kind of their intentions to bring more products or buy more products domestically.
Yeah, and Huawei has already been doing this themselves because they recognized that they were such a large portion of the market. They build their own DSPs with help from Western suppliers. They've been investing heavily in both silicon photonics as well as indium phosphide based components. They haven't put anything into production. Is all of this very, very hard? Absolutely. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be successful in some areas. So I would expect to see, you know, Huawei, you know, try to spin out some of these components, perhaps, you know, or, you know, try to shore up HiSilicon as a you know, more independent entity that can sell to other equipment companies in China.
So the other comment we heard even just this morning is that they're mainly focused more on just the modules, but they'd continue to buy the discrete components from the North American guys.
That's true. Yeah. So I mean, the first place to do this is get the low hanging fruit, right? And one of the things though they talk about in the document is that, you know, China's already pretty strong in 10 gig shipments. There's a lot of people building 10 gig components in China, and specifically they're purchasing the lasers and assembling these things. But they call out in the document that, you know, just, you know, being an assembler of these modules and buying lasers from other people is not a solution. So I would expect that that's how they're going to start. And, you know, for that matter, you know, InnoLight has been purchasing lasers from Oclaro as part of, you know, their fulfillments into the DCI space. I would expect that, you know, there's going to be several people in Wuhan, and, you know, maybe one of them ends up being successful. When that happens, I don't know, but it would appear that this is now a strategic effort within the country to enter this market.
Okay. And it's, I think you'd agree though, this is beyond just components. This is coherent DSPs. This is TIAs. This is everything involved in making the transceivers and modules.
Yeah, everything. And I mean, the only thing that was surprising to me is that they also didn't identify, you know, things like Ethernet switch chips. It's probably beyond the scope of the document, but I just to share a story. When I was in China a year ago, I met with Huawei, and it was right after the ZTE penalty that was announced by the Department of Commerce. I can't remember the number, but it was enormous in terms of the fine that was levied on ZTE. And it was the first time I'd ever heard anyone from ZTE have some pity or some concern. It was the first time I've ever heard anyone at Huawei have some pity or concern over ZTE. That was a real wake up call to the companies over there that they need to do something. And, you know, Huawei had already started to insource a lot of their own manufacturing, but I think after what happened with ZTE, they really recognized how vulnerable they were.
Yeah. Hey, so if you think about what's most likely for China to kind of in-house quickest, right, and which ones are going to be, you know, difficult? You know, can they really do coherent DSPs? Can they do ROADMs? But talk about which one you think's, what do you think's most at risk right away?
I would say it's, you know, you highlighted, you know, the module assembly. So they can build modules and, you know, purchase lasers from multiple suppliers. I think on the client side, that's, you know, that's the lowest hanging fruit. That's what I would identify as the area of most risk. It also happens to be one of the worst markets right now in the optical area in terms of profits. So it's probably the least vulnerable. You know, going up from there, I would say, you know, Huawei is already, you know, focused on building their own DSPs. I would expect to see them, you know, continue to do that and take that to higher speeds. And, you know, Huawei having their own DSP and considering they're 2/3 of the Chinese market, they've in effect, you know, insourced a lot of that capacity. What I don't know is, you know, whether or not, you know, Huawei would consider spinning that out as an independent entity that could then sell to other Chinese manufacturers, or there could be a second source within China to do DSP work. I haven't heard of anything along those lines, but that was one area that was identified. Areas that I think are going to be tough. The tough ones are going to be things like, you know, tunable lasers. That's going to take some time to put something like that together. There's not too many people out there who can build a really high quality narrow line width tunable source today. ROADMs are another one, because it isn't just having the WSS. I mean, building the WSS by itself is already challenging. But in order to really be a successful WSS supplier, you have to have a greater appreciation of the system level and what's going on. And so that's another difficult area for the Chinese to get into. I know that they've already been in discussions with a Japanese vendor of LCOS sources several years ago. And there are people who have LCOS technology that's not currently being used in a WSS who are, you know, trying to find a way to put it to work. So the building blocks are out there, but the expertise required to build a system level ROADM is extremely challenging.
Yep. Okay, fair. Hey, so Andrew, I want to just challenge you a little bit here too. If you go back, I don't know if it was Q2 or Q3, you tweeted out that, you know, China port shipment was really strong. And then I just read your Q4 market survey, China port shipment for 100G is really strong. So, I mean, are you shot? I guess what I'm trying to figure out is has China already started to in-house some of this production, and that's why the equipment companies aren't seeing a rebound?
No, that's it. If you look at even, you know, where Huawei is going in their next generation DCO this year, they're still sourcing those products from the outside. The numbers that came out of Huawei in Q4 so far are it was a record quarter in terms of revenue. So there's been a big divergence in the revenue that these companies are reporting and the components that, you know, are essentially being shipped into by the Western vendors. I don't think it's an insourcing issue. I haven't been able to identify an alternative source. So it's a matter of trying to figure out and forensically understand why there's such a gap. You know, is it just a question of the inventory that was shipped in was just so huge that it's taking time to work through, or is it reductions in price? I haven't really come to a conclusion of why there's such a big gap.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
I will add one thing. One more thing. If you look at Q4, it was very much a Huawei-centric quarter in China. So if you look at ZTE, you haven't seen the same hockey stick in revenue. So if you, ZTE, you can correlate pretty strongly with Acacia. I wouldn't expect, it's not like ZTE doubled their revenue or something like that and Acacia was flat, which would be very strange. This is very specific to Huawei and their performance in Q4.
So I got one inbound question on this topic. It says, does Chinese policy make them more likely to buy U.S. optical component companies? To reach these goals, could they buy a NeoPhotonics, right, and get a lot of capability quickly?
I don't know. I don't know. Because I think they want to own, they don't want to just own the company, they want to own the expertise. So, and I don't know to what degree that expertise at a company like NeoPhotonics is, you know, here in the U.S. versus China. I don't know, you know, the ins and outs of these companies and where the expertise lies. You know, if 100% of the expertise was in San Jose, I would expect the answer to that to be no.
Okay, that makes sense, yep. All right, hey, let's shift gear to just ROADM demand. Starting in China, what are you hearing, and then ultimately North America?
I haven't heard any change out of China. I know that Lumentum was talking about some upticks in demand in China. That might have been for export, because, you know, as we talked about, Huawei had a good quarter. But domestically, I haven't heard of any change of plans there from China Telecom and then follow on to China Mobile. I think we've talked about this on previous calls, that they're, in essence, they're waiting for the latest generation ROADM technology that Lumentum is working on in order to do widespread deployments. And in the meantime, they're really just limiting what they put into their network. So that's my understanding of the situation, and I haven't heard anything else.
Can you talk about the ROADM that Lumentum has? I know it's an N by N, but maybe just explain it.
Yeah. So Lumentum hasn't, I don't think, announced anything about this. But you know, Huawei has been pretty open about what they're doing, and Huawei's customers have been talking about it. But Lumentum is building a new WSS module that basically solves all the problems that exist in the existing CDC-based architectures, colorless, directionless, contentionless. If you look at the design of a CDC ROADM, it's complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. There's certain architectural or network architecture limitations when you start using lots of super channels and things like that. So it's sort of a substandard solution with some compromise in terms of cost and usability. What Lumentum's working on, this M-by-N WSS, it's challenging, but it addresses a lot of these complexities and could in essence drive the cost of a CDC-based ROADM architecture to be on par with more conventional ROADM architectures. So if they can get this thing to work, it's a real game changer in terms of how people are going to build ROADM-based networks, because there's really no, at least at this point, nothing in the way of compromises that you have to accept if they can solve the technology problems. And you know, talking with Huawei, they're planning to introduce this product in the second half of this year. And as I understood it, the device is already in 10,000 hour testing. I don't know if they're going to have to do a rev or whatever, but strategically, Lumentum seems to have a very strong relationship with Huawei and supplying these next generation ROADMs. And I haven't seen or heard anything from Finisar.
Okay. And so just to dumb that down, the M by N, it's absorbing the multicast switch functionality into
that's
the ROADM?
That's it.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, the MCS goes away. And once this product exists, there's really no need for an MCS anymore. And it's a normal WSS has lots of inputs and one output. And this is, has lots of inputs and several outputs. And so it basically takes over the function of the MCS in a superior way.
So Lumentum, I think Lumentum and NIO are the two suppliers of multicast switching, right? So
NTT Electronics. NTT Electronics is also a supplier.
Okay. All right. So if NIO was counting on a lot of multicast switch revenue, this could be, an issue.
Yeah, I think, they may not agree, but my opinion is that the MCS business, once this product exists in volume at a fair price, the MCS business goes away.
Okay, fair. Hey, how about switching gears here, 600G market? I'd love to get your thoughts on, for the discrete components, who's best positioned, modulators, mm-hmm. receivers, transmitters?
Yeah, this is a very clear situation. In 2018, Ciena is the only company that's shipping 400 gig product. In production. Acacia is going to be prototyping things in the second half of this year. I think you may see things from other vendors. I'm not sure exactly where Infi is, but they're probably in that kind of time frame. But in terms of real production shipments, Ciena is the only game in town, and that product so far is doing very well. In terms of Ciena's commentary about 2018, it's hard for me to reconcile that with the leadership position that they've put themselves in with this product. I don't understand why they're not going to have a better year than what they've said, looking at some of their annual projections, just because they're in a very strong position with the WaveLogic AI in 2018. Now, going into the second half of this year, you'll start to see products from Acacia. And Acacia is working with several OEM equipment folks with that design. As I understand it, they're planning to use their silicon photonics, but I know of at least one supplier who has asked them to de-risk this approach and use a Claro-based lithium niobate technology, so that, in case there's a problem with some of the the optical front end in silicon photonics, that there's a backup plan to use proven types of technology. So there's always risk with the DSP, but it seems as though there's some double coverage on the optics that sit in front of it. That DSP is a little bit later than what people had expected. I haven't really gotten a refresh on where it sits today, but I think it's safe to say that, you know, given Acacia's history of solid execution, that's going to be, you know, available by the end of the year.
How about some of the discrete component guys? Lasers, ICRs?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on, you know, for example, my understanding is that lithium niobate is being used for a lot of these first generation systems, particularly if they want to try to get to some of the higher baud rates. And I have to think about exactly who, I mean, Oclaro is a major lithium niobate supplier. Fujitsu was also one, but I don't have a good sense of who's best positioned relative to each other for the, you know, this next generation of products. I mean, I do know that Oclaro has been successful in several designs, but I don't know that other people have not. Does that make sense?
How about your? Yeah, no, it makes tons of sense. How about your sense of timing? I mean, is it design wins in the second half with a bigger ramp in 19?
Oh, I think the design wins have already, for the large part, happened. There's, you know, people who are positioning to use the Acacia DSP, or they're positioning to use Inphi or NEL DSPs. So, I mean, there's, but I wouldn't expect any volume until the end of this year. It's really going to be prototyping in Q3 and Q4. Like I said, Ciena is the only one that's shipping in volume this year. I would expect them to ship, you know, probably around 10,000 units in 2018.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, you assume 10,000 units attach, you know, a 2K ASP for the front end sitting in front of the DSP. So, you know, it's a $20 million piece of business.
Yeah, but shifting gears, just update on the ACO market.
Yeah, so the ACO market got very interesting. I think it's really turned into an annuity now for Oclaro, with, you know, supplying Ciena and Cisco. Cisco is still running very hard with their NCS 1000. It's continuing to be successful, and that's, you know, probably a very major source of revenue from Oclaro. As the NCS 1000 continues to do well. And I think Cisco's pretty confident that that can hold its own against this Ciena solution at 400G. They think that they've, you know, they've got a pretty good solution, and they don't see the bottom dropping out on that business the way the same thing happened to a few other vendors during these technology shifts. I think it's also challenging because, you know, Ciena is really sole sourcing this 400 gig technology, and that's always a bit of a headwind. So I don't see, you know, any, you know, I don't see the bottom dropping out on the ACO business. There's not a lot of, there's nobody coming into the business now at this point. But there's also not a lot of upside growth. All of the ACO sockets that are out there that have been designed have been designed. And as part of this transition to 400 gig, you know, ACO plays no role at all. But the interesting thing that has happened now is, Oclaro specifically, if you look at the technology that's inside that ACO, as people go to these 400 gig or these 200 gig DCO designs, or even 400 gig DCO designs, the guts of that ACO can be repurposed and used inside of a DCO. And in fact, I'm pretty confident that is what Huawei is doing with their next generation DCO design that they're doing internally. They're sourcing the guts from an ACO and using that with their own DSP and packaging it in their own DCO platform. During Oclaro's call, they talked about the ACO business ramping into 2018, which really surprised me. And, you know, my understanding is that when they talk about their ACO business, it's not just the module business, it's also the parts that go into the ACOs. So this, you know, this business with Huawei, if Oclaro is secured, it could be significant, simply because those guys are shipping tens and tens of thousands of units a quarter.
Greg was with us this morning, and he did say that the ACO bucket that he's going to be reporting is his components that are going into other ACOs, DCOs. Makes sense.
Yeah.
And, so did Finisar, or go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I asked him that question after the conference call, whether or not he considered the components as part of the ACO bucket, and he said yes, and that's what sort of confirmed my theory.
Has Finisar or Acacia got any traction with their ACOs?
I don't know about Finisar. Acacia, I think they have some traction in very low power designs, is what I've been told.
Okay.
Low power 100 gig designs.
Okay, fair. Hey, how about shifting gears to the DCO market? Kind of quick thoughts. I mean, you already kind of stated that you think DCO is going to dominate for the 400G space. But
I mean, Acacia is just killing it in that business. They have a really good 200 gig CFP2 DCO, and my understanding is that some of the other component companies were planning to build CFP2 DCOs using an external DSP supplier, and then they looked at the performance of that DSP. And they realized if they built a module around it, that it wouldn't come close to competing with what Acacia had. So a lot of those programs were delayed. And you know, you hear Oclaro talking about DCOs in early 2019, but my understanding is Oclaro and others were planning to ship things this year. It's just that they basically couldn't go toe-to-toe with the Acacia product. So
is it that all the guys in Go ahead, Andrew.
So I think you know, Acacia has a very strong product now. There's a big market for, well, I shouldn't say big, but there's a significant market for CFP2 DCOs, particularly in applications like switching and routing. So someone like Arista, you know, the CFP2 DCO, that's a perfect product for them. Juniper, portions of Cisco. That's where the market really exists for that sort of product.
But is it your belief that all the guys that are coming out with their new DCOs, whether they're partnering with, Acacia's DSP or Ciena's or NTT's or Inphi, that they're going to be doing CFPs and not CFP2s?
At this point, anyone who's building a DCO, you know, if you're doing the R&D now, it would really need to be CFP2. There's no market for a CFP DCO outside of, you know, what Huawei is doing, which is, you know, they're really going their own way. So if you can't build a CFP2 DCO, there's really no point in building a DCO. So I would expect, you know, people are working with Inphi, they're working with NTT Electronics. I don't think that Ciena has a product anytime soon that would enable a CFP2 DCO. So, and I'm not aware of Acacia selling their DSP to component companies to create, you know, another CFP2 DCO. For example, I don't think Oclaro can buy a DSP from Acacia and build a CFP2 DCO around that. So until we get effective DSPs from Inphi and NTT Electronics, there's just not going to be a CFP2 DCO market.
So what about, a year ago, Ciena announced their kind of open platform, right? So they partnered with Lumentum and Oclaro and Neo to make DCOs, right, with their DSP. So do you think that, I think you just said that they can't do CFP2s?
No, that chip won't do a CFP2 DCO. It just won't work.
So, but wouldn't those three then by definition be making a CFP DCO?
They're actually making MSAs, so they're not pluggable at all. They're building, you know, modules that have to be pre-installed in the equipment. And my understanding is that those MSAs are now, you know, under evaluation in China, that there may be some limited uptake for those, you know, MSAs, but you know, this is not going to be a major, you know, this is not going to be a material success for Ciena, this business. I think this is really about priming the pump for whatever Ciena is doing next, is whatever chip that may be, having, you know, some partners that they're already working with would allow them to get a much wider penetration of their DSP technology into the market.
Okay. Hey, so shifting gears again now, you hit on some of this, but the coherent DSP suppliers, just love to hear your thoughts on, you know, where the competition is in relationship to Acacia.
I don't have a good take on that right now. I mean, I do know that you know, Inphi wasn't where people wanted them to be with the previous generation. And I think, you know, Inphi has talked about some of the changes that they've made in their DSP development. So the next, you know, so you're going to see a lot of these companies, you know, going to 200G and producing 200G chips, but really 400G is the next, you know, the next battleground. And there's two types of 400G. There's the 400G ZR, which is this 80 kilometer application, very low power, specialized for, you know, shorter reaches. A lot of people talk about DCI applications, but it's not just DCI. It's basically, you know, every single link that's under 80 kilometers, which is, you know, probably half the connections in the world. You know, they're still running at 10 gig today, and there's no upgrade path to coherent. And this 400G ZR platform is that upgrade path. So you're going to see 100. I think you're going to see 100 gig variants of it, and the volume is going to be large, you know, outside of the DCI applications that everyone focuses on. And then the second is, you know, 400G, 600G, you know, long reach and mid reach, which is, you know, what Acacia's announced with the Pico chip and what I expect you'll see from, you know, Inphi and from NTT Electronics, although they haven't really announced anything.
All right. Well, how about, have you heard any chatter about some of these proprietary DSP companies looking at merchant?
I haven't heard any chatter. But I mean, I think you can do, I mean, Cisco turned, they're now in Acacia house. If you look at Coriant, you know, they use Acacia. I think the ones that are kind of on the bubble would be Nokia, Infinera. I think, you know, if I had to name one that was likely to turn, it would be Infinera, because they're a very pragmatic company. They're trying to accelerate the speed at which they release new products. It's going to be difficult to release a new pick every 2 years if they're trying to do their own DSP. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them move to an external DSP supplier for the next generation ICE 5 stuff. Now, we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but to move those DSPs to a 2-year cadence is a very big commitment.
What about Cisco? I mean, Cisco's already using Acacia, right, for the Verizon Metro?
Pretty much. I mean, I think they still have a skeleton crew working on DSPs, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some, you know, some targeted products come out of that. You know, maybe a 100 gig coherent. I mean, I don't know. I'm speculating, but you know, they've clearly partnered with Acacia going forward.
Okay. So I got an email question here. It says, "Is Huawei using Oclara's components to build CFP DCOs or CFP2 DCOs in-house?"
CFP DCOs with the potential to go to CFP2 DCOs. What Huawei is doing is they're riding this CFP architecture as long as they can. Specifically, what they've said is they don't want to move to CFP2 DCO until they can get equivalent performance to the larger CFP DCO. So it's going to be a function of when they can get a 200 gig DSP that matches the performance of their existing 100 gig DSP. Once that happens, then the whole company goes to CFP2 DCO. But I would expect that on the optics side, they would probably try to stay with the same design going from one to the next, because that specifically that Oclaro design can support any of those applications.
Okay, then part two of this question was, can ZTE make CFP2 DCOs in-house? Assuming the answer is no, if Huawei is not doing CFP2 yet. But
well, I think the challenge there for ZTE is if they're going to build CFP2 DCOs, they need to have access to the standalone DSP from Acacia. And I don't know if Acacia is willing to sell them that or not, because Acacia is in the CFP2 DCO business. So it's a complicated situation.
They decouple it, right, and just sell them the DSP.
And originally that was, it was the same way at 100 gig, is they only sold the modules to ZTE. And then ZTE said, look, we just want to buy the DSP. We're going to, build our own optical front end. And so there was some negotiation and that happened. And so maybe the same thing happens with the CFP2 DCO. But ZTE may not, I don't know for a fact that they're, going full into this pluggable type of architecture that Huawei is doing. It may be that they're going to do something different.
Okay. All right, I got another question here emailed to me. It says, please ask him about Inphi, TIAs, drivers near term, and then the colors opportunity.
Well, colors, they talked about losing their second big customer, or I don't know if maybe losing is not the right word, but the second opportunity isn't coming through. My understanding is that was for the shorter reach version of the colors that they announced last year at ECOC. I still firmly believe, and I would think that Inphi would probably agree with me, that long term, colors is going to be, essentially put out of business by 400 gig ZR. And Inphi knows this, and they're working very hard on the 400 gig coherent ZR business, because that's where the color stuff will migrate. And then in the meantime, they have this, interesting business, and they're going to see what they can do with it to capitalize on the investment that they've made.
So I think Microsoft was their first customer. Would you agree Google was their second customer?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think a lot of people are speculating. I don't know how many people really know.
Yeah, fair. How about just their TIAs and drivers near term?
Well, I mean, they're a good barometer for the coherent business because they have such a strong position, and I'm not aware that that position's been compromised at all. I think the challenge will be, protecting the margins because it's a great business. There's a lot of people looking at it. But, Inphi's done a great job in terms of execution and moving up to higher baud rates and better throughput to support 400G. So that's, they are the barometer for the coherent business. And I think if there's one company in the world that knows what's going on in terms of coherent port shipments, it's Inphi, because they have the commanding heights in that business.
Last question on Inphi is just the PAM4 opportunity.
So they've been working on that longer than anyone else. The PAM4 opportunity is huge. If you go into 2019, you start moving to 400 gig Ethernet and also single carrier 100 gig ports, that's the whole market's going to move there in 2 years, for the hyperscale guys. And I don't have a good idea of who's winning and losing in that market. But the fact is they have been working on it longer than anyone else. So it seems to be a safe bet that they're in pretty good position there. But I don't know how they stack up versus the four or five other companies that are all trying to do the same thing.
Hey, why don't, operator, could you just maybe cue the audience to see if there's any questions?
Certainly. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. You'll hear a three-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw, you may press 1-3. And if you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome your questions. Please press 1-4 on your telephone keypads now. One moment, please, for the first question. And gentlemen, we have no questions on the phone.
Typical. Happens every time. How about, so Andrew, I want to ask you about Infinera. You've been very, very tuned into that business and kind of nailed it kind of on the upswing and downswing. So just kind of status on the new products right now, the ICE 4 and kind of the traction they've got in the market.
Yeah, so, you know, listening to the most recent conference call, I was surprised, like, just looking at the market reaction. I mean, I'm certainly not an expert in there, but to me, there wasn't a clear sign that the company is completely out of the woods from a revenue perspective. So I was a little surprised with what the stock market did. But looking at the fundamental business, they've now started to ship this ICE 4 based product. And you know, if you look at from when they started first making shipments early last year, they just haven't been able to ship it in any kind of, you know, big volume. And I think what may have happened is that has now become unstuck. So whatever had that stuck has become unstuck, and they can now roll that product out. And what I don't know, and this is really the critical question, is how that competes against all of the existing 200 gig solutions that are now, you know, pretty entrenched from multiple vendors. When they came out with 100 gig, they were late, but it came in at a cost point that was very attractive relative to the incumbents. And so they were able to get some good traction. That's the key question. I don't have the answer to that. But if the ICE 4, from a pricing perspective, for these applications where people need multiple wavelengths, lots of, you know, capacity, and they can really leverage that pick, then, you know, they've got a good opportunity. I just don't know, you know, where they are in terms of yields and costs on that particular product, and how they're going to face what is at this point a pretty entrenched 200 gig market that has already undergone in 2017 some brutal price reductions. I mean, we haven't talked about this, but the spending from all of the hyperscale guys in 2017, year over year, I'd have to go look at the number and the reports, but you know, it's not growing despite all of the attention. And the reason it's not growing is because the pricing reductions were so brutal. I don't see that happening again in 2018 because there's not a similar technology transition. In 2017, we went from having two vendors who could sell 200 gig to five or six. In 2018, there's no such event. I mean, there's really no major key technology reaching the market in 2018. You have Ciena with 400 gig, but that's kind of sole sourced. And the other thing is you have Infinera now entering with the Gen 4 pick. So I wouldn't expect the same pricing pressure in 2018 that we saw last year. At least I'm not modeling that. But it really comes down to, you know, how Infinera solution is going to stack up against, you know, what is already a pretty competitive marketplace.
What have you heard about them technically? I mean, I think that was your issue when you kind of went negative on Infinera, is that competition caught up with them, and you know, if ICE 4 was effective, they could kind of take the technology lead again. But
I think, I mean, how they achieved that? I hate being called negative on Infinera, because if there's one company I want to see succeed, it's Infinera, because they take the big risks and they're doing very interesting work. But they were late with their product. That was the problem. And so now it appears that it is in volume and they can ship it. So what is unknown is how, you know, if you have Infinera entering the battlefield, and it's hard to understand how that stacks up against the existing solutions. I think technically it stacks up well, What I don't know is whether it stacks up from a pricing perspective. And I think they need a pricing advantage in order to really take share from the incumbents. The last thing I'll add, and you know, I had a vendor talk to me about this last week, is it isn't just about price and performance, particularly with a lot of these hyperscale vendors, is they have very specific demands about how these systems integrate into their own systems and the types of telemetry and data that they send out. And if you don't have those sort of functions, then you can't really design the product in at this point. And Infinera was really the first guy to go and pursue this market with the CX. So they do have some advantages in that market. They have an installed base with that product that does give them a bit of a downhill fight.
Can we spend like the last 10 minutes? Well, I guess I got two topics yet, but just carrier CapEx spending, you know, what have you heard about Verizon or AT&T?
So after the Lumentum call, I did a little digging around because I'm trying to put together my 2018 forecast for optical equipment. And, you know, based on what they said, I was thinking maybe I was being a little too conservative, but after communicating with a couple of vendors, you know, the Verizon business is not ramping this year. I got the impression from the Lumentum call that business was really starting to ramp into 2018, but I don't think that's the case. I think that it's more of a steady state business at this point. The second thing is AT&T, AT&T is pulled back in Q4, particularly in long haul WDM. And they're getting ready to roll out their new optical architecture. It's been delayed, and I don't really see that happening until around the end of the year. Their new Open ROADM initiative and the, you know, disaggregated terminals. So if you take, you know, you take Verizon's flat, and AT&T is probably, you know, not going to start spending till the end of the year, that's already a significant headwind to getting me to think that my forecast is going to be too low.
So to that point, I think Ciena said on their call that they expect North American Tier 1 to be down 2018 over 17. So that's consistent. But I tell you, both Lumentum and Oclaro, you know, told me on my follow-up calls that Verizon spending's picked up. So maybe it's just burning through some inventory. Right, and kind of getting back.
Well, I can tell you that there were people at their customers who heard the comment from Lumentum and were genuinely confused.
Right, interesting. What about CenturyLink Level 3? You know, they got a big RFP out. Do you think they stick with Infinera, or heard anything on when their spending bounces back?
Don't know. I really don't know.
But anything else, you know, internationally, any deployments of significance?
Well, Ciena's had a tremendous amount of success, as has Nokia in India. You look at the revenue that's come out of Asia, Asia ex-Japan, Asia ex-China, and, you know, Ciena's now sourcing almost $100 million a quarter out of that area. So that's been a big area of growth for them, and I think they feel like they can continue to do well. And it's also impressive because, you know, they're going head to head against Huawei in that type of environment. And Nokia has had a lot of success in the Middle East in 2017, going head to head against Huawei. So that's been going well for both companies. I think the only risk that I've identified in India is if you look at where the spending has been coming from, a lot of it has been Reliance Jio. And they're now, at least there was a merger announced between Jio and the old Reliance. And everyone knows what happens when carriers merge.
Yeah.
So,
not good.
I haven't heard that there's a... So all I have is that data point. And then I have a history of what happens when this sort of event takes place. So I am a little worried about that. But I don't have any specific knowledge that This is definitely going to affect CapEx, but people may not be aware that those companies are merging, and I wanted to highlight that.
Yep. All right. Interesting. Hey, how about the other thing we've heard this quarter, too, is just on the cable side seems to be bouncing back and hearing more about fiber deep architectures. So, you know, would you agree cable seems a little bit stronger and who benefits off fiber deep?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure that there's really any, I'm not aware of anyone shipping, you know, specific hardware into these fiber deep applications yet. What they are going to create, though, is a demand for greater backhaul bandwidth in more traditional systems. And so that helps drive demand. If you look at the cable companies, the one thing that they always do is they are always the first ones to deploy the latest high capacity technology. I mean, everyone knows about the DCI folks, but the cable companies are often very fiber constrained, and so they want to put that stuff into play. So I would think that that's, you know, that's going to be a big benefit to someone like Ciena, because the 400 gig product would be perfect for a lot of their needs.
I got one more question here on email. It's on the datacom side, so, you know, stop me if you're not the expert, but does Andrew have a view on Applied Opto's positioning, what that looks like going forward, and what is Intel doing, and what impact does that have on the market?
No opinion.
On Applied or just Datacom Optics?
Everything went sideways last fall in that market. I don't trust any of my knowledge at this point. It's everything changed very, very fast. I just, anyone who's in charge of running that business right now, I really feel for them because it's tough.
I agree. How about just any last thoughts, any other topics we should have asked? We just got a couple minutes left here.
Let me look at my list I put together here. No, I think, you know, I wanted to talk about what was going on in China with the DCO designs and how that's really impacting and putting a extra life into the ACO market. And we talked a little bit about 400G at Ciena. I think they've got a unique product there. And, you know, we talked about the 400 gig situation with DSP suppliers. I really think if you look at the next 9 months, it's a pretty static market on the telecom side. There's not a lot of changing. It should be more predictable than usual.
Yeah, I've kind of said that too. It feels like we got to wait for the 400G market to ramp before these stocks can really work again. But I did get one more, and probably this will be the last one. It says, how competitive is CX2 versus a Wave server?
I don't know. It comes down to, I think a lot of it's going to come down to pricing. And I will say, you know, Infinera, as I said earlier, they have an installed base. They understand the needs of the hyperscale folks. They were there first. So that's got to help them to some degree. But technically, I don't know how it stacks up. I mean, like I said, it's been difficult because until recently, there just weren't any copies of this Gen 4 PIC out in the field. You talk to, you know, carriers and you ask them, hey, so how's the, you know, the Gen 4 stuff look like? And they'd say, well, we don't have it. We can't get it. And that was the problem. And so now that it appears that they're starting to ship, more people will evaluate it and I can start to talk to folks and get an idea of how it's looking. But my understanding is Infinera has been prioritizing all their shipments into the hyperscale folks, as well as some submarine applications. And I bottom line is, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, Andrew, I think that that's our time limit thereabouts. So thank you so much for taking the time today. I guess I'll probably see you at OFC.
I'll be there.
Cool. All right, sir. Well, thanks again, Andrew.
All right. Thank you, Troy.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our call for today. We thank you for your participation, everyone. Have a great rest.